think the watchword for the foreseeable future is going to be remove. And I mean it. Everybody needs to go home. Remove the migrants. They are in need. Our citizens are in need. Remove ourselves from any association with the WEF other than to monitor them closely and the UN. Remove these illegal migrants. Remove the communist globalists and sympathizers. Remove all corrupt position people, members of government who are communist sympathizers. That's what I'm thinking. This communist president, our first communist president, is in his third term now. Would anybody disagree? As we visit with Michael Yon, you know, he's traveled or lived in more than 80 countries. He made Green Beret at 19. He's written so many articles, it's completely ridiculous. Born and raised in Florida. I mean, ridiculous in a good way, an awesome way. Yeah, U.S. Army Special Forces, age 19. More than half his life spent overseas. He's currently coming to us from the Netherlands now. But if you don't want to touch on this, Michael, we can save this for another time. And by the way, you spell his last name Y-O-N, okay? The whole Ukraine-Russian special operation thing is not getting a lot of press, not in the usual places. I'm pretty sure there's some going on there, but it's not featuring as much as if, oh, it's going to all calm down and go away, but I don't think it is. And Germany just refusing to turn on. Why don't you just buy some, why would they freeze their own people off by refusing to buy from Russia because of the special operation and what's going on in Ukraine unless NATO is somewhere in the loop? Over to you.
Right. And, you know, why is a good question. And not only that, but again, Germany is shutting off their own nuclear plants, even while they're going into a self-created energy crisis that's clearly going to kill Germany as we know it. The Germany as we know it will be dead within 6 months. As we go into the wintertime here, industry is shutting down, even as we speak right now. It's already been shutting down. So, you know, you mentioned NATO. Of course, I was in the Afghan war for 2 years, and I was in the Iraq war for 2 years. So that was 4 years between those two wars. I have not been to Ukraine, by the way, because I've been focusing on our invasion. I've been down in Colombia and Panama, out in the jungle, and I took two congressmen into the Darien Gap. Tom Tiffany was one of them from Wisconsin. That guy is so serious, it makes me want to move to Wisconsin just to vote for him. I mean, he's gone with me. So that guy is really, there are some good people. He went with me like 25 miles or so back into the Darien Gap jungle. I couldn't believe it. So we're out there with the Indians and everything else. But he was seeing how this flow is coming in from Africa and Asia and South America through Colombia and through the Darien Gap in Panama. And in fact, one day I almost had him down in Mexico, but unfortunately one of the staff didn't bring his passport. But Tom Tiffany's like, yeah, I'll go to Mexico. You know, he's ready to just, because we were down in Texas, checking out the border and whatnot. And I said, let's go to Mexico. And Tom's like, okay, let's go. You know, it's a congressman. You know, even Fox News won't do that. Fox News won't step foot in Mexico. And so it's amazing. And, you know, and they'll go all up and down that border. Of course, CNN won't. But NATO, let's go back to Afghanistan. You know, I spent 2 years running around in that war. Saw lots and lots of combat. And I can tell you one thing. NATO is not, you know, that's not a dog with serious teeth. I mean, for instance, France are good partners, but at the same time, they just don't invest a lot in their military. For instance, their fighter, you know, if you get an F-15 fighter plane, they got such a sensor package. You know, when I'm down on the ground with our guys with the JTACs or whatever, you know, telling our F-15 pilots where we're at, we could just wave a VS-17 orange panel on the pilot will see us from miles away. They're like, I see you're right by the corner of that house or something. You know, see us instantly, right? You know, we can just do the tiniest little things and they would see us. Meanwhile, when the French come on station, they're literally looking out their canopies with binoculars. You can't even make up, like, the Red Baron. Like, this is World War One or something, you know. You know, here comes the Red Baron. And the British were the same way. I love the British, you know. We still remember that little tea party. But, you know, but I spent a lot of time with the British in the Iraq War and a lot of combat with them. And in Afghanistan, again, did a lot of combat with the same unit that I was with in Iraq, actually. But I was with them in Afghanistan. And the British, they're very professional. They train hard. They're really, you know, good at their tactics and that sort of thing. But their gear was constantly breaking down. You know, they're constantly relying on us for everything, you know, whether it's air cover, counter battery radar. When I was with them in Iraq, you know, down in Basra, we were taking so much mortar fire and rocket fire on the bases, taking a lot of casualties from it. You know, about 50% or so of the casualties in Iraq happened on the bases from, you know, from the mortar fire and the rocket fire, right? We were taking a lot of that. You know, with American forces, you can't just linger out down there and have a cigarette and shoot mortars at us, because we've got counter battery radar and we've got mortars that are very accurate, and we've got artillery that can really shoot snapshots real quick, and we've got aircraft. You know, we'll see with the Q-38, Q-39 radars. If you shoot mortars at us, we will know your point of your point of origin. They call it the POO, P-O-O, the point of origin. We will know that point of origin while the mortar round is still in the air, before that thing even splashes. I mean, I've been with the radar people sometimes just waiting for the next attack, and boom, here it comes. Hey, here we go. And there's the, and the, so they're on the radio immediately. Here's the point of origin, da 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 da. Here comes F-16 or something. You know, you got the enemy has to shoot just two or three, four. If you're shooting like five rounds, you're really praying to Allah that day. You shoot 10 rounds, we'll smoke you. You know what I mean? And so, but not with the British. The British, you know, can't afford that radar or something. Well, you know, so I was down there with the British. They had to basically build habit trails, you know, those little hamster trails of sandbags everywhere and all these barriers and stuff so that you could get around the base without being blown to shreds. I mean, you're on the ground like 10 times a day from incoming fire, right? I mean, we literally take incoming mortar fire. You can't do that to an American base without getting really smacked down. So I see some Americans show up one day to the base down there in Basra. I said, hey, you didn't have to bring counter-battery radar, did you? Because, you know, stay here for about within 1 hour, you're going to be on the ground. You know, I jumped under one desk one time, and under the desk was written, you're under here because of the incoming, aren't you? This desk is not going to save you. You know, it's like a British sense of humor. And they're like, yeah, the Americans were like, yeah, we're bringing the radar. And I'm like, thankfully, I mean, you know, And you know, so, you know, once we put the radar up for the British and then put some F-16s on station, we put that stuff down. Yeah, you still take some incoming, but they can't sit there and fire like 20 rounds at you. You know what I mean? They'd have to do a two or three rounds and shoot and scoot. But that, what I'm getting to is, you know, we'd be out on combat missions. I'd be with the British and their vehicles would break down. And in the many, many hundreds of combat missions I was with American forces, only one time did an American vehicle actually break down in combat. It was just a tire fell off of a Striker, actually, but they have eight tires, right? So we just jumped out, put the tire on top. It was pretty heavy and kept going like nothing happened because the other seven tires worked fine. I mean, our vehicles, well-maintained. Unfortunately, it looks like the U.S. Navy is not keeping those standards these days. I don't know how the Army is now, but back in the Iraq and Afghanistan war, our gear worked very well. British gear, not so much. And, you know, and many of the other NATO members, they just didn't have it. So when Trump was over and chastising Europe for not, you know, committing to their fair share and their agreed fair shares of NATO, it was true. I mean, I saw it in the wars. They're just, you know, it's like the Three Stooges, because their gear, they just don't have enough gear. It's breaking down all the time. You know, British, you know, always waiting, you know, relying on America for air power, relying on us also for helicopters. You know, it's funny, when you're on a mission with American forces, you know, you might get, you know, let's say an F-15 and an F-16 show up together. Often they have two different sorts of aircraft together, and they do that so they can, you know, the Air Force guys and the Navy guys, they have different sensor packages and different weapons they carry. So if you have two different aircraft, you can have, you know, different sensors and different weapons. And so that, and so you can have a sort of more flexibility. So, you know, let's say it's a couple F-15s, they show up. So when they come on station, they'll tell you how much gas they got, you know, how long they can stay in the air. You know, so it'd be like, you know, we can stay, you know, we got, I don't know, 233 minutes of fuel. We got a refueler coming. We'll basically be up here all day having coffee. You know what I'm saying? And they'll start listing off all their weapons. You know, we got all these JDAMs and all this stuff. And, you know, you're like, that's quite a lot of weapons for the things. Then the British, you know, if they're the ones giving you the air cover, it'll be like, you know, some Harrier shows up or whatever, like, okay, I'm on station. I've got 18 minutes of fuel and I've got, you know, one, you know, 500-pound bomb. You're like, what, are you kidding? Why don't you just go home? You know, it's like, I mean, seriously, because you will be going home in 18 minutes. You know what I mean? It's like it'll be like a single airplane with, like, you know, 18 minutes of fuel and, like, one bomb. You know what I mean? And our guys show up, it seems like just the entire Air Force is up there. It's just two airplanes. You know, and that's what I'm getting to. It's like, it's basically the United States against the world. I mean, NATO, I mean, they're great for, you know, I mean, we need teamwork, of course. We need bases to land our stuff at and whatnot. But, you know, again, the military has changed dramatically just since I left. The last time I was in actual combat with U.S. forces was about probably 2011. So that's more than 10 years ago now, right? And in that short period of time, though, the military has clearly just collapsed. I mean, you know, we've got, you know, General White Rage Milley, Mark Milley. I mean, where'd that guy come from? In Austin, must have been the dumbest officer in the whole U.S. military. You know, one of the things I've said many times, having spent so much time with the U.S. military, either as a soldier when I was at Green Beret or just later, even a lot more time as a war correspondent, is that we just don't have any dumb generals, right? Our generals tend to be quite smart. You might not like them or something, or you might like them, but that's irrelevant. But they were all pretty smart. But now I'm starting to see a new batch that has made it to the top, like Milley. He's just not that smart. And Austin, you know, the SecDef is just dumber than a turtle, you know. And so, you know, we're entering into these conditions. You know, we could go into war with China over Taiwan or so many other things. Of course, the issues with Russia, this thing's not going to be over fast. Russia's turned off their gas. Russia's got plenty of gas and fuel energy to get them through the winter. No problem. They got plenty of food. Is their economy damaged? I'm sure it is. But who's getting damaged worse? Europe. Europe is being slaughtered. And as Europe is slaughtered, self-slaughtering itself, basically, it's going to take a lot of people with it. As we already know, China's staggering around anyway from their ridiculous whatever they're doing with COVID and whatever else they're doing over there, but they're clearly falling apart. You know, the last time I was really dealing with China was when they kicked me out of Hong Kong in 2020. And I've been still focused on China constantly. But you know, the thing is the whole system is collapsing. Europe, of course, the United States we're all inextricably linked together in this huge global economy. You see, we may have a big train strike in the United States soon, not to get domestic, but all these things are all part of the same ecosystem. And these migrants that are coming in across the border every single day in Texas, as you know, this is going to have a massive effect. The United States is clearly, you know, as a war correspondent, I came back to the United States in September of 2020 after spending years, the 20 years before that, I had spent very little time in the United States. I've been off in, you know, wars and conflicts and this, that, and the other, India, Nepal, and, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, long list, right? And I finally, in 2020, I said, you know, the conditions are accruing and being set for the United States to actually go into a civil war. That's like being an oncologist and diagnosing your own family, you know, your whole family has cancer. You know, so I flew back to the United States. And I went coast to coast. The first thing I went was straight to Portland, Oregon, and watched the Antifa and BLM out there. I was out there with them as they rioted at nighttime. I dressed up like a bum, you know, because there's bums, there's homeless people all over the place. So I just kind of slept around like a bum for a few weeks. And and listen to the Antifa and BLM. They're up on their bullhorns in front of the courthouse downtown in Portland saying that they're going to do genocide against white people. They say it all the time. You get up on the bullhorn, we're going to do genocide against Caucasians across America. We're going to do arson everywhere. We're going to burn down your cities. They're saying this on the bullhorn, right? And as you know, that was right on the tail end of a lot of fires that had just occurred all over Northern California and Oregon and other parts out there in the West. And they were bragging about it. They were bragging about it. Meanwhile, anybody said that on social media, they got cut off, right? So, you know, all these conditions are being set. It's clearly being set that the leftists, you know, the progressives, you know, these people that brag about being progressive, write down their names. You know what I mean? And these communists, which basically progressives are, and the globalists, all these guys all in that same ecosystem of authoritarianism. And again, let me go back to, I'm in Netherlands right now. I'm going back to Germany today. But this whole continent has become authoritarian. It's very authoritarian. I mean, they're so easy in the saddle with it. They're like a horse that's been fully saddled and doesn't even realize it's got like eight riders on its back. You know what I mean? I mean, the farmers here are tracked. Everything they do is all the inputs. It's not like you can go buy a bunch of extra fertilizer without it. You know, the Dutch authorities would be like, why are you buying so much cattle feed or fertilizer or whatever? What's going on here? You know, they track everything down to the kilogram. This whole, you know, the authoritarianism is, you know, the United States, we're going to have to fight for our freedom. We know that. I had grandfathers that fought in the Revolutionary War. My family came to America in 1609 and promptly got shipwrecked on Bermuda. And then finally, 10 months later, made it to Jamestown, straight into a famine, right? Wow. I mean, it was just, we know that because there's the shipwreck that they were on. They were on a ship called the Sea Venture. There happened to be an author on that ship who was basically doing propaganda for the Virginia Company. And then they got shipwrecked and they had a mutiny and all kinds of stuff. It was pretty intense. And then my Eastern side of my family is my mother's side. My grandparents were, my ultra great grandparents were on that ship. And my uncle was born on Bermuda and he was named Bermuda with an S on the end of Bermuda. And so my feelings for America, I never say I'm like a Scott-Irish American. I'm just American. And that's it, going back for 400 years, you know what I'm saying? And I had grandfathers who fought in the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, and the whole, that, like Forrest Gump, the whole family tree. And everybody suffered for it. And it's that time again. We're clearly going into a Civil War, one that nobody in their right mind actually wants, especially people that have been into a lot of wars, really don't want this to happen. But it's clearly the conditions are being set for it. One of the things I look for when I go to conflict is I ask people how they feel about their military, how they feel about their police, what do they feel about the government and the courts. Are the courts fair? Do they feel like there's justice? Because when you hear things like, no, there's no justice in this country, those are the sorts of things that, if people think that the government is illegitimate, it's only there because it actually has power, right? Those are the sorts of conditions that can actually lead you, you know, your feelings about the government. Is it legitimate or is it illegitimate? And if your basic feelings are it's illegitimate, okay, that's a big check mark on the side that people may be willing to go into a war, right? Is it being abusive? Do you have enough food? I mean, the bottom line is that when people don't have enough food, that's it. Game on. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, I do.
Like in 1848, that's why I call what's happening now global 1848, right? That's when there was revolutions all across Europe in 1848 because they called it the Hungry 40s, right? The 1840s, a lot of food shortages. And finally, boom, there were eruptions all over Europe. And that's why I'm calling what's happening now global 1848. Yeah, I mean, so many of our families have fought. You know, there's a lot of Scott-Irish all over Texas. That's why you got, you know, so many cities and towns named after Scott-Irish. You know, people have really fought for America many, many, many times in many wars. And it's clearly coming to that again. It's really unfortunate. And we are, you know, people ask me every day. Somebody just asked me while I was waiting to go online with you, John. Somebody was asking me, like, what country can I go to? You know, I'm like, the United States. I mean, there's no other. What are you going to do, go to Canada? I mean, that place is basically becoming North Korea. I mean, you know, it's not that bad yet, but it's getting that way.
Let me ask you this, because we're fixing to run out of time, Michael. But are the Dutch going to prevail? And are their protests continuing?
They continue. Yeah, definitely, they're continuing, and it's clearly growing support for them. But when you look at the trend lines here, it's clear that Europe is going to run out of fuel and fertilizer and all that before they can have any success. I mean, it's clear that Europe is coming into a collapse. So, I mean, and that's, we're talking about in a matter of months. And again, I'm talking in terms that I don't normally talk in with such confidence and security in what I'm saying. It's almost like you drop an apple and you know it's going to hit the ground, right? You can see it. The energy is there's just not enough energy, period. And the fertilizer's not being made, period. Prices,
so we're too late.
Energy and some, yeah, it's too late. And factories are shutting down in the UK and across Europe as we speak. So we're going into like a Weimar situation. There's a great book on that, by the way, called When Money Dies. I've been recommending people read When Money Dies and Red Famine as well. And you read those two books and you look around and you're like, hey, this is what's happening right now. You know, in Weimar Germany, of course, in the late teens and the early 20s. After World War I, doing the reparations and one thing led to another, you know, Germany started printing a lot of money. I'm skipping past a lot of details here, but they ended up in hyperinflation and famine, and then Hitler came to power.
Yeah. Wow. That was a quick hour's worth, almost an hour's worth, less our mandatory breaks. Michael Yon, let's stay in touch. You are welcome to come back on anytime that you have time and give us an update on what's going on around here. But the bottom line, folks, is prepare, because this is not going to get better. It's going to get worse. We might as well just wrap our minds around it and deal with it. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Anytime. Shout out to our friends in the Netherlands. Stay strong. This is The Ark. We'll be back. As we carry on toward the midnight hour here in Texas. Greetings to everybody listening on the various streams and over good old, solid, reliable over-the-air radio. Thank you very much for carrying the program. I hope you find this information valuable. I feel pretty sure that you do. But for some reason you don't. I can't take the information back, so I guess it's unlike the fuel up deal, where if you don't like the fuel up, well, you get your money back. If you send your empty bags back, I can't take the information back. And I wish it were a little bit more pleasant, but it is not. We were all born for such a time as this, and here we are. So without further ado, the authors of the AmericanReport.org, Mary Fanning and Alan Jones, welcome back. You can talk now.
Thank you for hosting us this evening.
It's all
thank
good,
you, John.
Mary.
It's so nice to be with you and the American people.
I'll tell you what, this has been the proverbial barn burner tonight. I'll tell you, so much information, but it all looks really it's so creepy. Frankly, it's just so strange to see this devolve to the level that it is now. But this thing with in just a few minutes, it's going to be the 10th anniversary that Benghazi set up. So take us where you want to go with this. We heard from the man whose name may not be spoken, who was actually at the Italian airbase. They're ready to go. They're already loaded and ready to go. All they had to do is get him to the runway and get him up and running. Would have been no problem. Told to stand down and so forth. And then the part about funding. The last people, ladies and gentlemen, you would ever imagine that we were funding. So, Mary, take it away and just tell us exactly what were we protecting over there other than our embassy or whatever it was, the annex they're calling now, have off and on. Then other people say it wasn't the annex, it was a safe house. So the facility, the compound that got attacked, what were they actually trying to protect, if not that?
Well, unfortunately, it looks pretty similar to what they're protecting in the Ukraine now, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
You know, and I think that the American people are starting to see, as we pull, you know, one thread after the other of proof and facts and military, former military men coming forward, you're starting to see the tapestry. And the tapestry is showing that they're using terrorism against America to force the Great Reset, to destroy the United States of America, to dismantle it in order to go into that new world order. And so what happened tonight is another military man came forward to say that he was at Aviano, and they were all spun up and ready to go to save our people at Benghazi, and they were told to stand down. They were given orders to stand down.
Yeah, we were told about the captain of an aircraft carrier out there that was prepared to launch, and he was removed from command. I never heard anything more about it, but that's what I heard.
You heard right. And in fact, we heard that he didn't realize that there was someone from the agency on board, and they locked him up in the brig.
So that really did happen?
From the best of our knowledge, that really did happen. But what we also brought forward is the information about the former military who were in the SCIF in AFRICOM and CENTCOM, and now at Aviano, who told that they knew the attack was happening, they knew it was coming, they were ready to stop it. They were loaded, the flights at Aviano, as you heard on the recording, and they were told to stand down. The same thing was happening at AFRICOM and CENTCOM, that they wanted to send in the special forces to help, Special Operations Command. They were told to stand down. I think that with what is so stunning is not only were these people told to stand down, but they were also, Leon Panetta, the Obama administration, General Martin Dempsey, SecDef, they testified before Congress, Hillary Clinton. They all lied. They gave all sorts of excuses why they couldn't make it. It was going to take too long. This would take multiple hours. All of that is a lie. Our people were there, and they could have been saved. And instead, they didn't.
Yeah, let me ask you this. Let me toss one Alan's way. Alan, what do you make of the fact that they could have saved them, but they didn't? Why did they not? Did they want them all to be... I'm just going to ask it the way I'm thinking it without trying to sugarcoat it all. Did they want everybody wiped out? Was that the idea? I mean, why would they not, after whatever was rescued out of there? What was rescued out of there anyway? I mean, what was there a bunch of cash there that they wanted to get? Or why would they let these... The first question is, why would they let our SEALs and other people, including our ambassador, be murdered by these mugs? Why?
Right. So there were several Americans killed that night, CIA security contractors Tyrone Woods and Glenn Doherty. They were both former U.S. Navy SEALs. And then, of course, you had Ambassador Christopher Stevens and then U.S. Foreign Service Officer Sean Smith, who did a lot of IT work. So we had drones in the air. We knew what was happening on the deck. And you can only imagine how our service members, whether they were at Aviano Air Base in Italy or whether they were aboard U.S. Navy vessels, to realize that there were Americans, their brothers, in danger, in harm's way, and that they had the capability to rescue them, that, you know, we had assets on the flight deck that had loaded bombs and munitions ready to go on the mission and take out these terrorists that were backed by the Iranians. Of course, not everybody understood that at the time. Some people maybe did. But why would we do that? Well, that's a great question to ask Hillary Clinton under oath. And that's what needs to happen. and not let her get away with and say, what difference does it make at this point? You know, Americans died, and we were hiding something. I'll let Mary go beyond that.
Yeah, Mary, I mean, why were they attacked at all?
Well, those who were in the skiffs and AFRICOM, et cetera, they were watching this. They knew in advance that it was Soleimani, General Soleimani, and the Quds Force. This was not a protest. This was not locals. This was not about a movie, as Susan Rice and Hillary Clinton both lied about. This was Soleimani. Those who were in the skiff at AFRICOM and in CENTCOM told that it was Soleimani. They knew it was Soleimani. They were told to stand down and not even direct people to go after them. They were not allowed to track them as they left. So they knew that this was the Iranian general Soleimani that Donald Trump removed from the face of this earth.
Wow. That's terrible. And that's just putting mildly. Wow.
It's treason.
And here it is from Vox.com. The CIA initially believed that the attack was inspired by The Innocence of Muslims, a very cheap YouTube movie by Nikula Baseli Nakula. Most ridiculous thing I ever saw on any video ever. How anybody could do anything other than laugh and turn it off immediately. It was so stupid. The animation was terrible.
Remember they held him in prison then, John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll bet. Now, the part that's the most interesting to me is that many of us have believed for a long time that ISIS and even Al-Qaeda, or Al-Qaeda, or whatever, however you pronounce it correctly, depending on who you're speaking with, that they're creations of our intelligence services. Now, what's this about arms being sold to ISIS for use in Syria? Do I have that right?
Well, remember General Michael Flynn came forward, and he told that they were shipping arms to Al-Qaeda and ISIS in Syria. And others wrote about that they were shipping them directly into the port of Banias and Bar Islam in Syria. So they came out with great detail, Victor Thorne for one, as to, you know, who was shipping these weapons. But also, if you remember, it was quite a hubbub in Congress when they found out that they were being given thousands into the tens of thousands of man pads. That meant that now you had any little terrorist could take down an airliner.
Yeah. Now,
yeah.
Who is Kenneth R. Timmerman, who, according to whom, the Benghazi attack was funded with hard cash in the form of euros smuggled into Libya from Malaysia for the Iranian Quds Force? I mean, good
Ken
grief.
Good grief is exactly right. His book, Dark Forces, and other books. Ken came forward, and he actually worked with some of the same people that we did, the same military people. And he came forward with the banking records. He had to hold back and not bring everything forward right away because his source was in an Iranian prison until he could get him out. Ken Timmerman, longtime legislative aide in Congress. He ran for Congress. He's written multiple books, but he has insight, particularly across the Middle East, that few do. In fact, he was also, when we broke the story on Gulf Tainer and the Jaffars, Ken was one of the few people who was well aware who they were because he knew so much about what was taking place in the Middle East, and particularly with Saddam Hussein's nuclear weapons mastermind. So Ken was important to the story about Benghazi because he had the information, and he also knew that monies were being transferred to Soleimani. So, I mean, think about this. Who's paying Soleimani, and that they knew about this, and that the people in our skiff knew about the pallets of money that was being sent to this Iranian general, master terrorist, that was taking out our people. And you also have to keep in mind, this was the first time in, many, many years, I think only the second time in our history, that we had lost an ambassador like this. And it was a horrific death. for General, for Ambassador Stevens, who it came later came to be known was with the agency.
Ellen, you want to add something?
Yes, I think people need to wake up, and hopefully the military was waking up and asking themselves that night, what the heck is going on? Something doesn't add up with this picture. I mean, I thought we're the good guys. We're supposed to go rescue Americans that are being pinned down in a firefight. Why aren't we going? And it must have been sort of a real aha moment for some of our service members, and I really pray for them as they deal with those memories on the 10-year anniversary of, you know, maybe some of them have PTSD, remembering the feeling, the sinking feeling, the sickening feeling that there are Americans who desperately need help and they can't go and rescue them, even though they have millions of dollars worth of aircraft and satellites and every bit of technology they could have. So I think it's important here on the eve of September 11th. Actually, it's already September 11th on the East Coast. That we remember those that died that night in Benghazi, as well as those we lost in New York City at the World Trade Center, at the Pentagon, and in Shanksville. And it should be a day of remembrance and pause.
I'll tell you, 21 years ago, the world changed into this creeping totalitarian state. And then 10 years ago in Benghazi, what a disgrace. And Leon Panetta, according to notes that the actual words that he spoke provided by Mary, there was no specific intelligence or indication of imminent attack on the U.S. facilities in Benghazi, and frankly, without an adequate warning, there was not enough time, given the speed of the attacks, for our military assets to respond. The United States military, as I've said, is not, and frankly should not be, a 911 service capable of arriving on the scene within minutes to every possible contingency around the world. And then General Dempsey stated during the same hearing, there are some places on the planet where we have some gaps, and I think North Africa is probably one of them. Well, that's because he knows the American citizenry is largely not aware that North Africa is otherwise known as the Middle East. I'm sure there was no tech that could be deployed anywhere in the Middle East, right? Ridiculous statements from both of them. Disgraceful. Over to you.
Lies. Well, you know, Colonel Sellen got in touch with us during the show tonight. Colonel Lawrence Sellen.
PhD.
And he sent PhD. He sent two emails this evening. And one stated that he received, my nephew is a Navy SEAL assigned at the time of the Benghazi attack to anti-piracy operations off the coast of Libya. They were ready, locked and loaded that night to go in and assist and were told to stand down. A second email, yesterday, a neighbor here in Atlanta told me her daughter is a VA nurse in the D.C. area who has been caring for a burn victim that was in Benghazi. Her daughter had been contacted three times over the course of his treatment by none other than Hillary herself, asking after the names of the people who had been trying to talk to the patient.
Yeah, I'll bet. Mm-hmm. Well, this is Obama's third term. And Brennan, the guy who voted for the communist candidate Gus Hall in 1976, and said, hey, you know, being kind of messed up when you're a kid won't keep you from something like this will not keep you from being a part of CIA. This guy is a CIA director, a former communist voter, okay? And he's arming ISIS out of seaports in Libya. Well, we've all seen it. Most of us have seen it, these videos that show a movie set, and there's Jihadi John, same holster, same thing, and he pretends to cut the throat of his latest sacrifice, and then tousles the guy's hair, and they break for lunch. Their guy's sitting in canvas back chairs with their ball caps on backwards, and cameras are down there, and lights and everything. If that's a phony photograph, it was really, really well done. I don't think it was phony at all. It was just a little bit too theatrical, you know?
Remember, they identified Jihadi John then, and he used to do that to his, as he was terrorizing the journalist that he had taken hostage. And he would do it to them, and so they never know if he was going to go through it or not. He did cut their necks eventually, and they identified them by the vein formatting on his hands. That's how they identified Jihadi John.
You know, I am reminded of a company in Great Britain. They changed this little logo about 15 minutes after it was on Caravan to Midnight, back when we were doing only video, and it was Crisis Solutions. The clue is in the name. It's like, what clue is in the name? Could it be ISIS? And they were all, in all of the cities, they had internet connections so you could view in real time a staged event. Manchester's one of them. So was New York. Now, I'm not saying that people don't get hurt in these things. I'm just saying you can watch this in real time, and you can adjust your tactics on the fly and adjust the scenario a little bit here and there. Yeah, Crisis Solutions, the clue is in the name. I'm telling you, it wasn't but a matter of hours, as I recall, seriously, before that logo was gone, that the clue is in the name thing was gone. So it's all deception, but there seems to be no justice. Will there be justice? Alan, look into your crystal ball and tell me if there will be justice. Somebody tell me there will be some justice for our countrymen.
Usually, over a long enough timeline, justice usually finds those that deserve justice. The question is how soon. It can't be soon enough.
It's true. Mary?
The American people have to understand that our freedom was paid for in blood and treasure. And the fact that they're using terrorism to kill our own military, and it's from people inside our own country that are part and parcel to this. Just as Michael Yon said, it's not an accident that they put morons in charge in our military. General Milley, General Austin, others have gone up to them and said, that told them that they're, you know, traitors and that they're morons. And so this is pretty much what they did in the Bolshevik Revolution with the Comintern, where they put the idiots in charge to make sure that the country could not survive. So the American people are watching this. It's toward our destruction. They're working with the global Marxists. They're, the same thing is true of Larry Fink and BlackRock. What he's just done, you know, telling Enron to turn over their contracts to China, while the, you know, spigots have been turned off in America and we're buying, you know, from our adversaries, we're filling, you know, the pockets of those who are here for our destruction. This is not going to go well unless the American people stand up.
You're going to have to, ladies and gentlemen. Each one of us is going to have to. Mary and Alan, thank you very much. Mary Fanning and Alan Jones of the American Report. .org. God bless you both. Thanks for setting this up and executive producing tonight's program, Mary. And thanks for the backup, Alan, very much.
Thank you. Never
forget. God bless America.
God bless America. God bless you both. Well, do we feel like getting rough on some people who, need to have us get rough on? And they know they're over the line. I'm talking about people in government. I'm talking about this ridiculous invasion from all over the world into our country. Yeah, but they have it even worse. Well, they're able to raise families with lots of children in them. And the Mexicans aren't the ones who are coming over the border in large percentage. It's people from all over the rest of the world. All these things that so many people have been talking about for all these years that were scoffed at. Well, who's scoffing now? As Eddie Temple said in the old movie Layer Cake to the man with no name, you better believe it because it's bleeping happening. So, remove corrupt politicians, corrupt judges, illegal immigrants. Everybody go home and disconnect from the matrix in every way that you can. Now's the time to call upon the good, sound mind that the good Lord gave you. From the Bridge of the Ark, God bless you, everyone. Stay strong, and good night.